I want to greet each of you in Jesus' name this morning. Welcome you all here to this service. Appreciate it being here this far. And just desire an interest in your prayers as we continue. I wanted to say here before I get started, and since I'm pretty new at this, I can still say this without tooting my own horn, but I know before I was ordained, I came to church Sunday morning expecting to be fed and taking for granted all the work that went into somebody doing that for me. So, I haven't done much of it yet, but bless you, those of you that have. You know, I was trying to figure out what I was going to preach about this morning. I kind of had a thought in my mind, and I was reading some with that thought, and I read in Haggai chapter 1, and it sort of jumped out at me and shifted my thoughts just a little bit, but that's what I'm going to preach out of this morning. It's Haggai chapter 1. You can turn there if you want to. This is a prophecy here from Haggai. He was one of the prophets, and this happened. The setting for this, his prophecy was, or his time of prophesying was when Ezra. It can actually be found in the book of Ezra, chapters 1-6. It was after Cyrus, king of Persia, had been moved by the Lord to send up the Jews to rebuild the temple at Jerusalem. He got everything together, including the vessels that had been taken, and he sent up this large group of people. It was about approximately 42,000 people plus a lot of animals that went back up to Jerusalem, and their job there was to rebuild the city, rebuild the temple. The main thing there was to rebuild the temple. So they go up through there. You can read this story sometime. It's an interesting story. But so they get up there, and the first thing they do is they set up the altar. They rebuild the altar and start offering sacrifices. And about 2 years after they were there, the priests got together and they began to put down the foundation for the temple. And suddenly the people around there started realizing what's going on. Here this nation is coming back and they're going to rebuild their temple. And they realized and they knew from past experience that if they got this temple rebuilt and started worshiping God again, it's going to mean trouble for them because it was a God that they couldn't fight against. So they decide they're gonna do something about this. They don't really want this nation back. They don't want them serving God. So they go up, a group of them goes up to the Jews there, and they say, we're gonna worship with you. We want to be part of you. We're gonna help you build this temple. Well, the leaders there saw through it, and they wouldn't allow that to happen. So the nations and people around them tried a different tack. They started to discourage them. They hired counselors to work against them. And the people, it kind of slowed them down, but they somewhat kept working. And then there was a new king in Persia, and they sent a letter to him, and they complained about what's happening, and they told all the things that the Jews had done in the past. And so Artaxerxes, king of Persia, looks back in the records and he finds out, yes, this is true. This nation was a nation that conquered many other people. And so he commanded that the work stop, the work on the temple. And they had made it as far as laying the foundations, but that's as far as they went. And so they did stop. The Jews stopped building the temple. And I'm not sure exactly how long of a span that was before Haggai came on the scene. But this Haggai came on the scene and he started prophesying. And this chapter is that prophecy then. It's not recorded in Ezra, but it's recorded here. So I'm just going to read, I think we'll read verses 2 through 11. We could start at verse 1, but there's a lot of names in there I don't know how to say. So verse 2, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have so much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little, and when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. So this, we could read on. There's more to his prophecy, but it's basically a lot of the same thing. But the part that jumped out to me, and what I want to look at this morning, is found in verse 5 and verse 7. And that, if you want a title for the message, that could be the title. Verse 7, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. You know, they were sent up specifically to rebuild the temple. And they had stopped. And so there's two things in this chapter that I'm going to pull out as parallels for us today. But before we get on that, so the temple for the Jews, this was basically their center of worship to God. It was a holy place where God could come. It was where God had his relationship with them. And today, I would like to compare that to our hearts. You know, God wants a place. He wants a place that's holy. He wants a place where he can come and have a relationship with us and dwell with us. And I also think our churches should be made up of people with hearts like this. And so I think we'll look at it, the rebuilding of this temple as our hearts, and also refer to it some as of our church as well. You know, do we ever feel like verse 6? Do you ever feel like verse 6? You know, we try. We sow and we work in God's kingdom. We try to, but there's very little accomplished. We feel like we're not filled when we eat. We feel like our love toward God is cold. Do we know what that's like? I think it's good for us to consider what we're doing, if that's how we feel. You know, this word here, consider, basically means to think carefully about, to think about what we're doing. So the Jews here were supposed to be rebuilding the temple, rebuilding this place of worship with God, and they had got sidetracked, they got stopped, and they needed to to go on. That's what God wanted them to do. The first thing I want to pull out of this is in verse 2. It says, "Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, This people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built." You know, I think at this point they were discouraged. They were discouraged by the people and the nations around them. And discouragement is something that certainly affects and hinders our relationship and our commitment with God. You know, do we find ourselves in a place of discouragement this morning? I know it's something that we all face. Sometimes it's more than others. It's different for different people. But when we do find ourselves discouraged, do we lack the commitment to God to get up and to keep on fighting and to build our temple so that God can dwell there? You know, the Jews here, yeah, they were stopped, but they could have got back up and kept on going. That's what God had wanted them to do. That was His command to them. You know, there's things that we all face, discouragement at times. It can be different, like I mentioned, but, you know, sometimes we have things in our lives, struggles that we have, and we try, and yet we still fail. Or maybe it's somebody else that we really respected and appreciated, and they have failure in their life. Does that cause us to become discouraged and to give up? Or maybe it's the circumstances in the world we live in. You know, we think about look around us at the government and the way things are going in the world, and it just makes us discouraged. It does me anyway. Maybe it's responsibilities we face. Maybe it's the responsibility of raising our families or whatever it might be. And we just try, but it seems like we never quite can do it enough or good enough. Or maybe we look around in the churches around us and Mennonite churches, and we see all the church problems, all the drift, and seems like people are growing cold in their love for God. Do we allow that to discourage us? I know it can be discouraging for me. You know, one thing I thought of in our church here, something that I sense just a little bit is, you know, the outreach. It's something that sounded great, and let's do it. But now that we're actually facing reality, it's a little bit discouraging, and I think I sense it a little bit amongst us is discouragement. You know, people are going to be moving. There's lots of work to be done. You know, for those going, you got to sell your places and buy new places, figure out what you're going to do for work, find a new church. It can be a little bit intimidating, a little discouraging. For those of us that are staying, you know, it feels discouraging to see our friends leave, our friends moving. Things feel like they're being broken up. You know, it can be discouraging. You know, to those that are going to the outreach, let's just try to keep in focus what it's really about. You know, what are we going for? To be a light for Jesus in a new community. And to those of us that are staying, let's encourage them, bless them that are going, even though it is hard for us to see them go. You know, a lot of times, at least for me, I tend to view discouragement as a result of something, or maybe it's a result of circumstances, or maybe it's even myself that I'm discouraged with. But you know, the Jews here in this account, they were facing discouragement from their enemies around them. And I think we need to view discouragement as coming from our enemy as well. It's something that Satan uses against us. He probably uses circumstances and things that happen to us to tempt us to discouragement. But discouragement is really from the devil. It's from Satan. And I think he's used it in a powerful way against the church and against believers. I think we need to work hard to overcome this discouragement and to get up, keep on, keep fighting. You know, you can think of examples in the Bible of people that were discouraged. One that came to my mind was Elijah. You know, he had overcome those 400 prophets of Baal, and then Jezebel wanted to kill him. So he went and fled out into the mountains and into a cave. And then God found him there and he said, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" That's not what God wanted for Elijah, for his servant. God sent him back, told him to go back and anoint a new king, and gave him the reassurance that there was at least 7,000 left who had not bowed to Baal. You know, when I think about my own life, this is something that I struggle with, is discouragement. Seems like the last while, it's something that has been a struggle for me, is to not be discouraged. You know, it seems like we're so busy, lots of things to do. There's just things like being a better father. I see so many needs in that area. And when I look in my life, I see things where I'm not what I wish I was. And it's tempting to just become discouraged and to give up. You know, now I'm supposed to even be a church leader. And I just, sometimes I feel like I can't quite do it. Like to ask y'all to pray for me that I could be could overcome the discouragement and to keep on. You know, it's something that all of us face. And let's work at it together, where we see each other, where we're discouraged or facing a struggle. Let's encourage each other. Let's help each other. Another parallel I want to pull out of here, and it feels like it's maybe switching gears just a little bit, but is in verse 4 and also in verse 9. It says here, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste?" And then verse 9, the end of verse 9 has a similar thought. "Because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house." You know, the temple here that the Jews were supposed to be building was lying destroyed. The foundations had been rebuilt, but that was as far as it went. And the Jews were living in nice houses. This sealed house here basically means that they were paneled inside with cedar or some other costly wood. Basically a luxurious house. You know, here it mentions the people's houses because there was a literal house of God to be rebuilt. But I think it can mean lots of things for us today. Basically anything that takes our focus and our attention away from our relationship with God, from creating that holy place in our heart for him to come and dwell. You know, I think it's kind of interesting here. You know, the Jews had failed often in worshiping idols and other things that they shouldn't have. That's actually why they were in the place they were and had been taken captive to Babylon. But here they're not scolded for their idols, but they're scolded for their houses. Or basically, I think there's a lesson there for us. I think we definitely have the potential to have idols today, things that take our heart from God. But I think there's a warning here that maybe there's a point between losing our love for God and actually worshiping an idol, where there's something in our lives that isn't necessarily all bad, but it's getting too much of our attention and has the potential to make our love for God grow cold. You know, how do we find ourselves this morning? Is our heart growing cold towards God while we pursue the things of this world or things of this life? Are we content to drift along and look and act like we should, but unwilling to really look into our hearts and see what's there? You know, there's, again, lots of things that could take our attention away from God. Lots of things that we all face the same, and for some of us it might be different than others. But just a few that I thought of, you know, some could be our hobbies. One could be, you know, hobbies, there's nothing wrong with a hobby, whatever it might be, fishing, hunting. You might have something different, whatever it is. Those things are good, but if they get too much of our attention, if our focus is too much on them, they can hinder our relationship with God. You know, what about our businesses and our money? Another important part of life, something that can actually be a real blessing in God's kingdom. But if they get our focus and that's what our drive is, they can take us away. You know, there's things like maybe it is our houses, material things, clothes, vehicles. You can put in there whatever it is for you that that can get in our way, in our walk with God. Maybe it's our reputation. It's good to have a good reputation, but if that's more important than obedience to God, then it's out of its place. You know, power, control, all those things are things that can hinder our walk with God. You know, some questions I thought of that we can ask ourselves about these things. You know, do they bless me in my walk with God, or do they distract from it? Do they help me to draw closer to God, or do they actually push me further away? Do they bless those around me? Do they help others? Is it hindering them? Well, when others see what I do with these things of life that we need, does it point them to God, or does it point them to myself? You know, 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "Whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God." You know, the things of this, the material things of this life, this world that we must be a part of, the things we need to do, let's make sure that they're bringing glory to God and not to ourselves. You know, some things that we can face more on a church level. You know, we like to have a nice church. And I'm not talking about just the church building. But we want our church to look good. We want it to other churches to appreciate us, and that's right. But do we look down on other churches that we feel like are not? Maybe they're having problems, or maybe they do things a little different than we do. You know, our focus should be on having a church that's obedient and pure and obeying God. You know, when when we have church picnics and ball games, are they all well attended while the old people's singings are sort of a drag? Who wants to go to them? Or maybe the trustees ask for a work day at church. Or do we have outreach opportunities and mission opportunities that here in the community that the church gets involved in, but they're left to only a faithful few to carry them out? Or maybe it's even those among us that are struggling and need our help. Do we have time for them? Do we think they're a little bit different and look down our nose at them? You know, some things that we can ask ourselves about our church. Is it fulfilling Jesus' command to preach the gospel and save the lost? Is it a safe place for sinners and those that are struggling to find encouragement and healing? That's what the church should be. Is it a pure bride that's waiting for Jesus to come again? You know, in Luke, there we have John sent his disciples to Jesus and asked him, you know, are you actually the Christ, or should we look for another? Jesus sent back a message to them, and I think it should be what our churches look like. It says that, then Jesus answering said unto them, this is in Luke 7:22, go your way and tell John what things you have seen and heard, how that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised, and to the poor the gospel is preached. You know, our churches should be a place where the blind and lame and lepers and the deaf and the dead spiritually are healed and raised, and that the gospel is preached to everybody, and each one is important. You know, some of those practical things that I pointed out, maybe it's sounds like I was trying to be critical or negative, and that's not at all what I mean. You know, I'm really blessed by our church here and the things I see that we're doing and the energy put into to building God's kingdom. But I also realize that we're all humans, and it's easier for us to get lazy. And I think it's important that we look into our hearts and we consider our ways. What are we doing? Where are we going? You know, I can't see into any of your hearts. You can't see into mine. Nobody can. It's something that each one of us has to do for ourselves. It's something that we have to be honest with ourselves about. You know, the reality and the sobering fact is that God can see. He knows exactly where our attitudes and priorities are at in life. You know, I wanted to look yet at chapter 2, verses 3 through 9. A few more verses there. This is in Haggai chapter 2, verse 3. Who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory, and how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work, for I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts, according to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt. So my spirit remaineth among you. Fear ye not. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. You know, God was promising the Jews there, if they got up and overcame their discouragement, overcame their distractions, and got to work and rebuild his house, there would be glory like they hadn't seen yet. And in that place is where God could give them peace. And I think that's what he wants for us too. He wants us to overcome our discouragement and to look into our hearts. And if we see things there that have distracted us, he wants us to consider those things and to get up and build his kingdom and to build our temple and make it holy and a place where he can come. And that's where we can find peace. You know, back in verse 6, you know, if we want to sow in God's kingdom and have a reward and bring in much, if we want to eat at his table and be full, or if we want to be clothed and warm in a world that's cold towards God, we're going to have to have a heart that's right with him, a temple where he can come and dwell. Now there's the enemies of the Jews, like we had mentioned earlier, realized that if they allowed that temple to get rebuilt, they didn't have a chance. And Satan realizes the same thing. He realizes that if we have a heart that's holy and God is dwelling there, that he will not be able to overcome us. And he's doing his best to distract us or discourage us and to get in there and to make a place for himself in our hearts and in our churches. You know, it's going to take serious and dedicated commitment for us to be able to withstand that. And with God's help, we can. There's a few verses in Isaiah 41 that I want to close with yet. Isaiah 41, verse 5 and 6. I'm sorry, Isaiah 41, verse 6 and 7. It says, they helped everyone his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smoothed with the hammer, him that smote the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering, and he fastened it with nails, that it should not be moved. I'd just like to encourage us. Let's help each other in the things that we face. You know, where we consider our ways and there's things that need changed. Let's encourage each other. Let's help. And, you know, if we build our temple, if we have our heart where God can dwell there, then we can be fastened, like this says, with nails that it should not be moved. Let's stand for prayer.